So we are holding on Chesamot Aleph about a bit more than halfway down the medium side line, landing in Ella. We learned in the Mishnah, we said how long, we talked in the Mishnah about the people have to contribute towards the city defenses and whatever, how long does a person have to be living in the city before he's considered like one of the people of the city? We said 12 months. Most of the Rumini. You have a contradiction to that based on a Mishnah from the end of Sanhedrin. It talks over there about the dinim of Ir HaNidachah. We know in order for it to be an Ir HaNidachah, you need that most of the population of the city has been convinced to worship Avodah Zarah. That's one of the criteria. What's considered the population of the city for this purpose? People who are passing through, when are they considered part of the population or not? And we know there's a difference. If it was Yechidim, if it didn't rise to the level of an Ir HaNidachah, if it was just Yechidim worship of Avodah Zarah, then each of them gets skila individually, like a regular Ovid Avodah Zarah, but their money goes to their property goes to their Yoshim as usual. Only with an Ir HaNidachah does it change that then they all get Hereg, they all get Saif, and their property is destroyed. There's a sicha someplace where there's, I think it's Chelek Yudalit or something, where it ever talks about the avort from the Rogachover, that maybe the idea is that once they're an Ir HaNidachah, then they become, in a way, Ois Jews, and therefore they become like Goyim in that sense, and Goyim always, when they violate the Shavu Mitzvahs, are killed with Saif. That's why they change to that. The Rebbe disagrees with that, and gives a different reason. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't think it's Chelek Yudalit. I don't remember what Chelek is in. I want to say Yudalit, but I'm not sure. Maybe Tess. I don't know. Anyway, so Mishnah says, "Hachameres vagamela saiveres mokum lemokum." If you have a donkey caravan or a camel caravan that's passing through from one place to another, belana v'sercha, they stayed overnight in the city that's on the verge of becoming an Ir HaNidachah, v'hudchayimohen, and the members of this caravan went and ended up being convinced to worship Avodah Zarah along with the inhabitants of the city. Hein v'skilo mamon and pola. These people, they're judged as individuals. They're not judged as members of the Ir HaNidachah because they're not living there permanently yet. But they get skila for worshiping Avodah Zarah, and their money is their property is safe, and it goes to their yoshim. But if they stay there 30 days, hein b'sayif from amon and ovah, then they're like the rest of the members of the Ir HaNidachah. They get sayif, and their money and then property is destroyed. So we see 30 days. We're kind of 12 months from our Mishnah. Yes, but there's a difference between whether you're called a member of the city or an inhabitant of the city. You don't have to be there that long to be considered an inhabitant. By an Ir HaNidachah, it uses the expression Yoshvei Ir, often says. So all you need to do is be considered that you inhabit there. Fine, 30 days is enough for that. To be considered Bnei Ha'ir, that you should have to join in the defenses of the city, whatever, that you need longer. And in fact, like we learn in a Braisa in connection with the dinim of Nedarim, Hamuda Hana Me'ansheir, if somebody makes a neder not to have Hana from the people of a city, what's considered the people of the city, anybody who's been living in the city for 12 months, also Lehanas Memenu, now this person who made the neder is also to have Hana from him. Pachas Mekan Mutter, but if it's less than that, then he's Mutter. On the other hand, mi yoshveir, but if he says I'm making a neder not to have any hana from the inhabitants of the city, so we see that there's that distinction between being anshei ha'ir, where you're considered a full-fledged citizen of the city, and therefore you need to participate in paying for the defenses and whatever, as opposed to just being yoshveir, which you need less than that. 30 days is enough. Question is, fine, but do we say that for all purposes to have to share in the expenses of the city, it's always 12 months, like the Mishnah said? But we learn in a Braisa, for your person has to be living in the city for 30 days to be obligated to participate in the Tamchui. The Tamchui we're going to be talking about soon. You have two different kinds of tzedakah collections they had in those days. You had the Kupa, which was they collected money and they gave it out to the Aniyim generally on Erev Shabbos. Once a week. And then you have the tamchui, which is they would collect food from the people. Tamchui is like a big serving tray. They would collect food from people and give it out to the aniyim every day. We'll see in the Gemara soon there'll be a couple of other distinctions between the tamchui and the kupa. So once a person is there 30 days, he has to contribute towards the tamchui. Once he's there 3 months, he has to start contributing to the Kupa Shal Tzedakah. Shishaluksus, if he's there 6 months, he has to participate in when they raise money to get clothes for the poor people. Tishalukvora, 9 months, and then he has to start contributing for burials, for the Chevra Kadesha. Shnei Masa L'Pasei Ha'ir, and 12 months before he has to contribute to Pasei Ha'ir. On the side of here, Masoret HaShas brings from from the Aruch that Pasei Eir means wooden beams that are used to strengthen the city gates. The Nemuka Yosef on the Rif says that it means rather that it means rather the moat around the city, like to prevent people from being able to come in and attack. Anyway. So you see that there's a lot of other things. You see there's things that you have to start contributing at 3 months, 6 months, etc. The answer is, yes, when the Mishnah over here says 12 months, it means when you're obligated to start contributing to Pasei Eir and other things for the defense of the city. It's true, there's lesser amounts of times you'd live there that you'd already be chayiv in various kinds of local tzedakahs. Also, Rav Asi says in the name of Rav Yechanan in this connection, everybody has to contribute to these Pasei Eir. Even the Yisoimim who live there, because as we discussed yesterday, the Yisoimim also need the protection. So even though normally you're not supposed to impose tzedakah on Yisoimim because they don't have the ability to be moichol, and also because they're not b'nei mitzvah yet, they're not yet obligated in the mitzvah. But things like this, where it's necessary for the defenses of the city, and it's a normal thing, then they have to contribute to it also. Mefoshim, by the way, get into an interesting discussion. What about more general taxes, the kind of taxes like we talked about yesterday, where the government imposes on a city that you owe collectively X amount of tax, and you have to decide among the various people of the city who's giving various amounts, depending right. How much they have, can you impose that on the Yisoimim as well? One way of looking at it is, yes, basically that's, you're paying that to the Goyish government for permission to live there. Therefore, the Yisoimim are as much responsible for it as anybody else.
And there's no way that the Goyish government's going to say, oh, we don't need that money, and the Yisoimim would have to be meichel because
right.
They're always going to go
right. There. So one way of looking at it is that. The other way of looking at it is, no, it has to be a more direct thing where it's a hanah there, like to pay for the defenses of the city, that's a more direct thing. But this kind of indirect thing where the government is taking taxes and some of it will be used for local public works projects and defenses and whatever, and some of it will just go into the king's treasury, lav dafka. There's a machlokes among the Rishonim on that point. But again, you don't collect for the Pasei Eir from the Rabbanon, because like we said yesterday, the Rabbanon loy tzurichin nitzirusa, the Rabbanon who meet the criteria that we said yesterday don't need protection, the Torah that they learn protection. We said that they have to be terosay umnasay, not that they're learning 24/7, but they can have a side job just to make as much as they need for basic parnasa and then go back to learning, and they have to be somebody who's at least well-known in their area as being a Talmid Chacham.
And your son said that's you.
Which is, not even close. Okay. Amar Abba, more dinim in this connection. Lashura, when it comes to contributions for the city wall, to fix it or whatever, or the parsha, and to pay a rider who rides around the city on horseback to guard it and then see what needs to be fixed around the city. Or the tarzina, and also to pay the person who takes care of the armory. They had in those days, people didn't necessarily keep their weapons at home. They'd keep them in a central armory in the city, and if the city was under attack, they'd go over there and everybody would get their weapon and start fighting. So you had somebody in charge of that armory. All those, again, all of those you collect from the assignment. But again, the Rabbanon do not need that kind of protection, and therefore you don't collect from them. Klala de milsa, so the general rule is kol milsa de islu hanamine, anything where there's a benefit from it, afilu miyasni, then they collect even from the Yisoimim, because the Yisoimim need that benefit also. Which again, that's the question, how direct of a benefit are we talking about, just regular taxes that aren't specifically earmarked for the city defenses or for wells or what have you. So the Gemara tells, Rabba Roma Tzedaka Yasmi Debei Bar Merion. Rabba imposed an amount for tzedakah on the Yisoimim of the household of Bar Merion. Bar Merion was a rich guy. I think we had him in Bava Metzia. Yeah, we did. So he left behind Yisoimim, and Rabba assessed them for a certain amount of tzedakah. What about Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda says you don't impose a collection for tzedakah on Yisoimim, even for Pidyon Shavuim, even though, as we're going to see in a second, that's a very great mitzvah, because, again, the Yisoimim are not b'nei mitzvah, so therefore you can't obligate them to participate in a mitzvah like that, when it's not a direct immediate benefit to them. Omalei, so Rabbi tells them, Anolach Shavino Kavidna. Yes, but in this case, I'm doing it for their sake, so that they should be considered more chashu, so their father was a well-known rich person in Baal Tzedakah. I want that his children should have the same name after him as well. And therefore that and therefore that's allowed because it's for their sake. It's in order to give them a better reputation in town. Some of Foshim say it would taka only apply to somebody who was really, really rich like Bameri, and it wouldn't necessarily just apply to a person who left behind a regular estate. Okay. So, talking about Pidyon Shvuyim. Yeah, we're not necessarily talking about on the scale of it. It's like the Gemara says in Kiddushin, you know, if a man is Makadosh, a woman, I'm an ass, but I'm rich. You don't say that he has to be rich like a Rav Elazar ben Charsim. He just has to be rich enough that people respect him for his wealth. Okay. So, Ifrahum is Imer de Shabu Malka. Ifrahum is, that was her name. She was the mother of Shabu Malka. Now here, unlike at the end of Messiah, where Rashi mentioned the possibility that Shabu Malka maybe means Shmuel, here it literally means Shabu Malka, the king of Persia. So his mother was named Ifra Hurmiz. Tosfos discusses a little bit the meaning of the name. Ifra means chain, like we had at the end of Bava Metzia, Apirin Namfi L'Rab Shimon. Hurmiz is the Persian name for Hashem. So therefore it means that she had a beauty that came, she had a grace that came from Hashem, sort of, I guess, in that sense, like the name Hananiah or something. Rashi in some other places talks about that maybe it meant that maybe Hurmiz is rather the name of a shed. So therefore, it means she had like a beauty, like a beauty from Shadim, like an otherworldly beauty. Anyway, whatever. She was the mother of Shabu Malka. Shadra Arnika the Dinri Lekamedi Rav Yosef. She one time sent a purse of dinrim to Rav Yosef. Omra, and she said, Lahevel mitzvah rabba. I want this to be used for a great mitzvah. So, Yosef Rav Yosef will come ayin ba. So Rav Yosef was sitting and looking into it. My mitzvah rabba. What do we mean by a great mitzvah? What does she mean that it should be?
He was blind.
Well, that's this time. No, Lavdavka. Maybe not. Anyway, my mitzvah rabba. What does she consider a mitzvah rabba for this purpose? Amalei Abaya. So Abaya tells him, Midetonid of Shmuel Bayehuda, based on what this brayta that we just learned that Shmuel Bayehuda said, Ein poskin tzedakah la'isem afilu l'pidyon shvuyim. Well, since he's saying afilu l'pidyon shvuyim, Shmamina Pidyon Shvuyim mitzvah rabbi, that goes to show that Pidyon Shvuyim is the greatest mitzvah there is, and therefore that's what it should be used for. Mm. Now, a little bit later, in a couple of blocks, we're going to talk about a discussion over there. We're going to have a discussion. We're going to have a discussion between Rava and Rav Ami. Should you be taking tzedakah from goyim? On the face of it, you don't want to give them chosim. And this Ifrahum is a goyta. She may be the queen or the queen mother or whatever of Persia, but she's a goyta. How do you take it from her? So, I mean, over there, the Gemara says that he took it Mishum Shloim Malchus, but he ended up sending it. There it was a different case. She had just given it for regular tzedakah, and he ended up giving it to goyish or poor people. So, Tosfos discusses it over here. There's a couple of possibilities. One is that maybe over here, same thing, maybe over here, Rabbi Yosef used it for Pidyon Shvuyim of goyim, not necessarily of Jews. Then Tosfos says, maybe not. Maybe the difference is that it's different if you accept it mishum shloim, if you accept regular tzedakah from a goyim mishum shloim malchus to keep peaceful relations with the government, and you use it for tzedakah for goyim, fine, that's not gnevas das. Goyim know that Jews give tzedakah not only to their own but also to goyim. Mefarnes ani goyim imani Yisrael mipnei darkei shalom. So therefore, that's considered a reasonable use of it. But goyim know that Jews do pidyon shvuyim only for their own. They don't do we don't go doing pidyon shvuyim for goyim. Otherwise, there'd be no end to it. So therefore, Tosfos brings an argument over here. Maybe Rabbi Yosef then had no choice, given that she said she wants it for a mitzvah rabba, which we understand to be Pidyon Shvuyim. Necessarily, it's going to have to be used for Pidyon Shvuyim of Jews. I be Vosh Ktira, you're not supposed to give them a tchus. No choice, Shloim Malchus.
Okay.
So those are the two possibilities that Tosfos brings up.
What was the first one again?
The first one was that indeed he used it for Pidyon Shvuyim of Goyim. Yeah. Okay. So, Amalei Rava L'Rava Bamari, Menachem Milsa de Amar Rabbanan de Pidyon Shvuyim Mitzvah. Where taka do the Rabbanan get this concept that Pidyon Shvuyim is the greatest mitzvah there is? Amalei, so Rava Bamari tells him, Dichtiv, because you have a pasuk in Yirmiyah that says like this. The Ibishter says to Yirmiyah, that's it, I'm sick of what the Jewish people are doing. Shalach me'alpanei ve'yetzeyo, send them away from my presence and they're going to go. So the pasuk continues, V'hoyu ki yomri alecha onon neitzei, so they're going to ask you, the Navi, where are we going? Then you should tell them like this, Koyamashem, Ashelamoves Lamoves, those who are destined to die naturally, that is, will die naturally. Vashelachereb Lachereb, those who are destined to die by the sword will end up dying by the sword. Vashelarov Larov, those for famine with famine, Vashelash or those who deserve it, whatever, Vashelashvi Lashevi, and those who deserve or who are destined to be taken captive will be taken captive. Each subsequent thing in this pasuk is worse than the previous one. So we see, in other words, that Chevy is the worst of all of them. Namely, how is that? Cherev kashim imaves, to be killed by the sword is worse than dying naturally, yiboyisem akrov, yiboyisem asvara. Either I can bring you a pasuk to prove that point, or I can tell you a simple svara. Yiboyisem asvara, you can give a svara, because haikam minvil, v'haylokam minvil. Because a person who's killed by the sword, their body is desecrated, it gets bloody and all, as opposed to a person who dies naturally does not, their body stays intact. Or I can bring you a pasuk in Hallel. Yaakov, Ene Hashem, Amov Salah Chassidus. Precious in the sight of Hashem is the death of his Chassidim. Marshal explains, the point is, we usually translate Yaakov as difficult for Hashem to see that Tzaddik can die or whatever, but here we use it in the simple sense. Yaakov, an honorable death. The Ebishter would like to see, Tav Yaakov, that the Amov Salah Chassidus is a Yaakov, is an honorable death, which is a natural death on their bed. He points out also that's why the next pasuk continues, Pitachtel Moisera, you opened up my chains, because you have the opposite extreme going into captivity, like we're talking about, which is going to be the worst of all of them. So therefore, David is saying that the best thing for the tzaddikim is none of that, is just some of the way they die naturally. Rav Koshmecherev, the next one in Yumio's pasuk, Ra'av, is with dying of hunger, is worse than being killed by the sword. Again, Iboisema Savara. Either I can bring you a pasuk, or I can bring you a svara. The svara is high comet star, but high low comet star. A person who's killed by the sword doesn't have any fire; they're just dead on the spot. A person who dies of hunger has a prolonged suffering.
Depends on sharp the sword.
Okay, it also depends where it hits on. Come on. Or I can bring you a pasuk from Eicha. The ones who were killed by the sword were better off than the ones who died of hunger. And Shvi Kashim Mikulam, and being taken captive is worse of all of them. Is worse than all of them. Dekulu Isnubei, because it includes all of them. The one who takes a person captive, he has him in his power. He could have him die a natural death. Marshall explains, like, for example, he takes him to a climate that he's not used to, and therefore the guy dies a natural death over there. We can kill him by sword, or he can starve him. So therefore, in that sense. Shivya is the worst, and therefore Pidyon Shivuyim is the greatest mitzvah. So now we're going to talk a bit. Now we're going to talk a bit about from here down onto for most of the next couple of blocks. We're going to be talking about the dinim and the agadta of giving tzedakah. The Rebbe pointed out in a sticha that I mentioned briefly when we were finishing Bava Metzia. Actually, I don't see you were here. That the three babas correspond to the three major golosin of the Jewish people. Mitzrayim, the golos after the first korban, which includes golos Bavel and part of golos Paras, and the golos after the second korban, which is golos Edom, which we're still in. Therefore, appropriately, Bava Basra, which is talking about that last golos, talks a lot about tzedakah, because of golos tzedakah shem karevet zagola. So, the kupa shel tzedakah, again, this money that the gaboi tzedakah collects and give out to the aniyim, that is collected by two people and divided out among the aniyim by three people, for reasons which we'll talk about soon after we finish the braisa. The braisa itself spells out the beginning of it. Nigvus b'shnayim, it has to be collected by two people. Because you're not allowed to have a position of authority over people. We'll see later on how collecting tzedakah is considered a position of authority less than two people. It has to be divided by three people, because it's like dinim ominus. They have to assess how much each oni needs. So therefore, it's like dinim ominus, and therefore you need three. Tosfos explains that you don't need three to collect it, because you know in advance how much each person is supposed to be given. So therefore, you don't need to sit and decide at the time you're going to collect how much each person is supposed to be assessed. You're just going around collecting it. But when it comes to giving it out to that name, you need to clarify how much each one is supposed to be getting. Tamchui nigvus v'shloisha mischalekas v'shloisha. The tamchui, the food collection, gets collected by three and also given out by three. Shegibuya b'chiluka shavin, because meaning that the collection and the distribution of it should be the same. The reason, so Rashi says the reason is because you, like this, if you collected it with only two, you need to give it out that same day. You don't want to have that you're going to collect it with two and then you're going to have to go looking around for the third guy in order to be able to distribute it. Therefore, make sure you have three, the three together at all times. Many other Rishonim learn that it's rather because the kupa is a fixed thing. You know all the time you're going to be going around every week or whatever and collecting the kupa every day, as the case may be, and collecting the kupa and giving it out every Erev Shabbos. The tamchui is an ad hoc thing. Sometimes you need it, sometimes you don't. In fact, the Rambam writes that the Rambam writes in Hilchos Matnas Aniyim that we don't know of any Jewish community anywhere in the world that doesn't have a kupa shel tzedakah. But the tamchui, some places have, some places they don't. It all depends what the local aniyim needs. The tamchui is more of an ad hoc thing, so therefore you need three to collect it also because again they need to be able to decide, they need to be able to evaluate how much each person should be giving. Tamchoi b'chol yoyim, another difference between them is the tamchoi collected every day, kupam, and distributed every day. Kupam me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos, the kupa is distributed every erev Shabbos. The primary purpose of it is, we'll talk about in the Gemara tomorrow, that the idea is that you're giving them enough food for a week, so like this they have money to buy food for Shabbos, and then they'll have the rest of it for the rest of the week. Tamchui l'aniyah olam. Another difference is the tamchui is meant for aniyim from all over, not just the local aniyim. Kupa l'aniyah ir. The kupa is primarily meant for the local aniyim. Rashoyim bnei ha'ir lakas kupa tamchui v'tamchui kupa. Now, the bnei ha'ir, the members of the city, some of Hoshim say it means the members of the city, the citizens collectively, others say that it can be the shiva tovei ha'ir or the parnas or whatever. Have the right. Lots of kupa tamchoi v'tamchoi kupa. They're entitled to take the money from the kupa and turn it into a tamchoi, for example, to give it out to the aniyei olam. Let's say Rashi says there's a lot of aniyei olam coming into town, so therefore they realize that we need to provide them something more. The kupa is meant only for the local aniyim, so the aniyim who are flooding in from out of town need something. So they're allowed to do that. The tamchoi kupa, or the other way around, to turn the tamchoi into a kupa.
Which means sell the food
and give out the money or to treat the tamchoi as a kupa and give it only to the local aniyim. Let's say they see it's only local aniyim, let's say there aren't any.
You probably wouldn't be able to sell that food.
You might. We'll see later on the Amud. You can have a case where they collected food for the tamchoi and it turns out there's no aniyim to give it to. And then, yeah, you sell the food. We'll see later. We'll see at the bottom of the Amud, yeah. So they're allowed to do that. They're allowed to change these funds for whatever they consider appropriate. Now, Tosfos and most Rishonim say that means even for things that are not tzedakah. As long as the kohol in general, the shiva tovei ha'ir, as the case may be, again the machlokes from before, decides they can even decide to turn this money from tzedakah for other purposes that have nothing to do with tzedakah. Tosfos mentions, for example, Rabbi Natan used to take money from the kupa of tzedakah and give it to the city watchmen because they're needed for the protection of the city, and he held that that's included in the lashanos of l'chol mashiyutzu. Most Rishonim also learn the same way. Some of them say that it only means l'shanos l'chol mashiyutzu among tzedakah purposes. For example, they can change the tam, they can take money from the tamchoi, let's say, and use it to buy clothes for the aniyim or whatever, but not to take it away from tzedakah altogether. Some of them also say maybe it only means you can borrow from one and you have to for purposes of the other, but it has to be paid back afterwards. Everybody agrees that the Gaboi Tzedakah don't have the discretion to do this. It's definitely, everybody agrees that either the Bnei Ha'ir or the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir that have this discretion. Bnei Ha'ir
could be
Rav. It could be Rav. If it means Bnei Ha'ir literally, then it would have to be Rav. If not, then yeah. But Ashrayim Bnei Ha'ir Lahasna Salamidus Salasharim. Now, also the members of the... Right. Yeah. Well, they were collected specifically for Purim, yeah, and Reb Meir said that they're not allowed to change it for anything, yeah. I mean, we have. That was only the day of Reb Meir, because Kol Hashana Midas Balabayis Mikur Gazlon, but so we're saying, according to the Chachamim, that you do have, that the Bnei Ha'ir do have the ability to switch it out. But no, they were saying the Gavoy Tzedakah can't, right. The Gavoy Tzedakah can't, the Oni himself can't, yeah. But Hashem Bnei Ha'ir Lahasnes Al Midas Balashoyim. The members of the city also have the right to make conditions about to make conditions about the measurements. For example, they can decide that the official weights and measurements from now on should be smaller or larger than they were before. Balasharim, or about the prices, they're allowed to fix prices and say that nobody should sell certain commodities for any more than a certain price. Later on in the Masechta, we'll have a whole sugya about this issue of fixing prices. Val schar poyalim, they can also fix amounts that workers are allowed to charge. And they have the right to, Rashi says, to cancel somebody who goes against Lassia, means to move away from strict din Torah, al kitzosan, on anybody who goes away, on anybody who violates even the smallest part, kotz shol yud, of their takanas, of their city takanas. Thus far the Braisa. Now let's start analyzing. Omamar, Einos and Sorotos al Asir Pachot Mishnayim, we said that you can't put people in positions of authority or power over the tzibur less than two people. It can't just be one person. Menahani Mili, where do we see that from? Omer Rav Nachman, Omakra, because you have the pasuk that says the heim yikhuas azahav. It says when it comes to making the big day kahuna, they, meaning either the gabay zaka generally, or some of the mafarshim say it means the tzal and aliyah, should take the gold and the silver, etc. So we see that when it's talking about sroda al tzibur, and in this case, the vote is the actual contributions for the Mishkan were nedavos, but you also had there was a master shekel, which is an obligation on everybody. That they would have to take it by force if necessary, as we're going to see in a minute. So that you need at least two people. A master shekel is a yalek nosa takor banos v'chol aval gam v'ya master shekel k'shebanu at Mishkan la v'tzrimata adanim.
V'zasut adanim v'amachzut shekel.
Okay. So the question is, statement. Now, what do we see from this braisa? You can't put people in positions of authority, of power over people, less than you always need to. But the implication is that one person, a yachid, can be trustworthy enough to be appointed as a gizbar, as a treasurer. You don't necessarily need two people for that, as long as his position does not involve any sroras. Which in that case, that supports what Rav Chanina said. The Amr Rav Chanina, Maisu, Mina Rebbe, Shnei Achan Ala Kofa. One time it happened that Rebbe appointed two brothers, which as far as the Dinim of Eders, for example, they would be counted as one person, but he appointed two brothers to be in charge of the Kofa, the Kofa of Tzedakah. So that was allowed because as long as their position didn't necessarily involve Sarara, didn't involve where they're going to be able to lord it over the people, as we're going to say in a second, then it was allowed. So maestro, so how do we see in what way is being a gabbai tzedakah a position of power over people? In what case do you have the ability to lord it over them? The Amr of Nachman, Amr of Ravor, Lefishim and Mashkin, and all tzedakah about Philip Erev Shabbos, because there's a din that they can take a mashkin from somebody in lieu of tzedakah even on Erev Shabbos. So the Bach says that this is talking about, for example, somebody pledged a certain amount of tzedakah, and now they come on Erev Shabbos, and he's claiming, like Rashi says, well, it's Erev Shabbos, I'm busy getting ready for Shabbos. Nevertheless, they can give him a mashkin. They can take a mashkin from him to, yeah. So that's the position of authority that we're talking about. Next question is, Amy, is that so? You're allowed to force people to give tzedakah? V'aksiv, but you have a pasuk that says, also in Yirmiyahu, Fakadzi al kolichtav, the Eidoshter promises that I will remember and pay back all those who oppress the Jewish people. V'am Rav Yitzchak v'ashmol v'amarta mishmedera v'afil al-gaboy tzedakah. That means even a gabay tzedakah who inappropriately oppresses the people and then takes from them when they're not ready to give. So we see it's not, you're not supposed to do that. That's what we're saying. The answer is like Kasha, Hod Omid. It depends whether the person who they're taking the mashkin from or forcing to give tzedakah, whether he's rich or not. If he's rich, if they know he can afford it, then by all means they should force him to give the amount that he's supposed to give. As opposed to if they know that he can't afford it, or they know that Rambam gives another example, let's say they know that he's already giving tzedakah much more generously than by rights he should be, then yes, it would be also for them to try and force him to embarrass him into giving more. As we find an example where Rava, who was a gabbai tzedakah, forced Rav Nosson Ba'ami, not necessarily forced him by beating him or whatever, could be forcing him with words Tosa says, and took from him 400 zuz for tzedakah. So Tosa gets into a bit of discussion. We have the Gemara elsewhere mentions the concept that when you have a mitzvah saseh, where the Torah itself says a reward for doing that mitzvah, Beis Din doesn't force people to do it. The example the Gemara gives to Gemara in Cholin is, for example, kibud av ve'ein. The Torah says right there, l'man yarichon yamecha. So a person effectively has the ability to say, look, okay, I don't care about arichos yamim, therefore I'm not obligated or whatever, but therefore don't harass me to do this mitzvah. So that's fine, I won't do the mitzvah, I won't get the reward. Beis Din can't force him to do that. Tzedakah is one of those things where the Torah tells us a reward right there, kibud av ve'ein. So how is Rava forcing him? The Tosfos says, for one thing, akseh can mean that he verbally convinced him to. Also Tosfos gives other answers. There's a lav involved in it as well. It also maybe it means shouldn't force people to do it, but they don't have to. But they still have the discretion to, and like Rava did over here.
לצערי הרב, היום הרבה עשירים במנהטן שמים גבי צדקה. וממלאים פסים, והם מחליטים כמה לתת, הם סוף ככה. עכשיו, לא תמיד הגבאים גם ישרים. מה עושים במצב כזה?
הגבאים צריכים להיות ישרים. אם לא, אז הרמב״ם אומר שאם כן, אז עדיף לתת לקופה של צדקה במקום לגבאים. זהו. אוקיי. The pasuk says, "V'hamaskilim yazhiru kizera harakia." There's a pasuk in Daniel that says the ones who understand will shine like the splendor, like the shine of the rakia, of the sky. And the pasuk continues, "V'mafdikir rabim katakavim loylam boy." Those who cause the many to do tzedakah, to be righteous, will be like the stars forever. So, what is this pasuk talking about? "V'hamaskilim yazhiru kizera harakia zed dayan shadun din emes lamitzay." This refers to a dayan who judges a din Torah emes lamitzay. What's emes lamitzay? What's the double expression? Tosfos says over here, let's say the dayan, the edim are saying the eders. He, you know, it sounds like everything they're saying sounds very plausible, but he himself realizes that something is fishy over here. If he were to judge the case according to what they're saying, that would be emes, but not lamitzay. Emes lamitzay would mean he'll realize what's going on over here and not judge the case according to him. Ma'arav gives a different answer, that the emes lamitzay can also include, for example, that it'll be a case where he actually paskins according to the strict halacha, not one of those cases, for example, where the Gemara tells us that the dayan should use his discretion. Anyway. There's that too, yeah. If they want a pshara, then you do that before the din starts, yeah.
The synesthetic has a lot on that.
About what?
Midas and emes and das and all that.
Okay. So what's the comparison to Zohar Harakia? So Marsha explains the vote is the sky actually appears to us in many different colors, but it has one real color, the color that reflects the Kisak of it. So the Dayan who sees past all the different possibilities of how the Edim are maybe making things up or whatever and judges the case according to the actual truth, he's like that Rakia. Tosfos, by the way, explains we're not talking about the regular rakia that we see. We're talking about actually the rakia that's above the Chayat HaKodesh, which is a brilliant rakia, even brighter than the stars.
Wow.
When we continue in the pasuk, that those who cause the rabbim, who bring the rabbim to righteousness, will be like the stars forever. Elo gaboi tzedaka. This refers to the gaboi tzedaka. Rashi explains because they're maskilim in the sense that they figure out carefully what each oni needs. Marsha explains there's also a verse, the stars are there both by day and by night, but they only come out, they're only visible at night. The same way the Gabori Tzedakah do their job both by day and by night, but when do they come to give it to the Aniyim? At night, so nobody sees, and the Aniyim aren't embarrassed. In that sense, they're like stars. V'masnitzatana, in a braisa, it teaches a little bit differently. V'amaskilim yazhiru kezer rakia, yeah, is that dayan shedundin emaslami, so just like the Gemara just said. But, v'masdikir rabim kakakabim loylam vod, elam malamdi chinoikis. The comparison to the stars is malamdim who teach children. So Rashi explains, v'masdikir rabim, because they teach the children to go in the right way. So the question is, what kind of malamda chinoikas are we talking about? Who are like stars, where again, even when they're not visible by day, they still have an effect on their tamidim. An example is Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. He's the famous one, by the way, who was descended from Haman. the Reb Levick, so the Rebbe's father, talks about in one of his letters to the Rebbe that by being a Melamed, he was mistaken what Haman tried to prevent the children from learning Torah in his time, the famous thing when Mordechai had all the children with him and Haman threatened to kill them all. So now his descendant, Shmuel Bar Shilas, makes up for that by teaching children.
And he's a descendant, even though all the children died.
The 10 main sons of Haman died. There were many others. The Gemara in Megillah mentions the possibility that Haman had.
Around.
Yeah, the Gemara in Megillah mentions a couple of different opinions. How many sons Haman had altogether? One opinion is as many as 208. The Roy Vano, Roy Vizmatri, 208. So only the 10 ringleaders were killed. The rest of them went and became poor or whatever. Yeah. So.
Goshen Geyer is not a.
It's not from Amalek. Yeah. Okay. So what happens? What's so special about Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas? The Rav Ashkechel Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas Tavikoy Beginza. One time Rav met Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas standing in his garden. Nu, where is Hamidim? Amalek Shabakte Leiman Rosach. Have you given up your Nemanus? You're always such a faithful teacher, and now why are you abandoning your Tamidim? Or Rabbeinu Gershom says that he's asking him, have you given up your job, Bechlal? You're going to go on to something else? Amalei, so Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas answers him, no. You should know it's now 13 years that I haven't even seen this garden that I'm now standing in. And even now that I'm standing in the garden, I still have my mind on them, on the children. So Rabbeinu Gershom says, prosaically, that it means even in the garden, I'm still looking out, and they can still see me, and therefore they're still behaving in class. But the Rebbe quoted this expression a number of times, that it means in a deeper sense also. Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas was so devoted to his Talmidim and had such a mental connection with them that even when he's standing out in his garden and thinking about them, it still has an effect on them wherever they are. That I've talked about it a number of times in connection with mitzvah chinuch. That is what chinuch. That's what real chinuch should be. Also, that I've pointed out in that connection that it's brought in Sfarim that his father's name Shilas stands for Shiviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. But when he lived with that kind of thing, that he always has the Eidishter before him, then it had that effect on his students as well. That even when he's not physically in front of them, he still has Ashba on them.
13 years.
No, it's not saying that he hasn't seen these Talmidim in 13 years. He's saying it's now. This is the first time in 13 years I'm Bechlal even taking a break from teaching and going out to the garden. Interesting in Rishimis that ever talks about the possibility that maybe based on another Gemara that says that Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas taught children in Bnei Brak, but we see from our Gemara over here that Bechora he lived in Bavel. So that ever talks about in Rishimis briefly that maybe that's part of it, especially if Rashi mentions the Yehul Hossam, maybe that's the vote. He lived in Bavel, but he was already many years in Eretz Yisrael. This is his first time in years revisiting Bavel, and even so, he still has that connection with his Talmidim back home in Bnei Brak in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so Rabban and Mai, so now we have to ask the question. We're saying all these great things about the Gaboi Tzedakah, about the Dayanim, about the Melamdim. What about the Talmid Chachamim who are constantly learning Torah? What's the special pasuk that says about them? What are they compared to? About them is what the pasuk says. The ones who love Hashem are like the sun when it comes out in its full strength. So they're even greater than the Rakia and the Kechavim.
That's a different drasha, I guess.
Not necessarily. I mean, a Talmud Chacham means that he also has the right midot. Turn it up on. Gaboi Tzedakah Einin Rashoyin Lifrish Zemizeh. When you have two Gaboi Tzedakah, we said before you only need two to go around collecting, they should not separate from each other. Rashi says because people will suspect them. Why is somebody going collecting on his own? The Stamei is going to steal them. Other Mephoroshim say not necessarily that people might actually be choshed him, but a Gaboi Tzedakah has to hold himself to a higher standard. There shouldn't even be the possibility of Hashem. But they can do, for example, let's say you have one of them goes to collect from the people who are sitting in the gate, and the other one goes next door to where the store is, as long as they're both clearly working together, one is close enough to the other. Another din, if a Gaboi Tzedakah finds money in the street, lo yitnim b'sech kiseh, he should not put it into his own pocket, because you don't want people to suspect him that he's taking money of tzedakah and pocketing it. Rather, we should put them into the purse that he's using to collect tzedakah. When he comes home, then he can take it out. Similarly, suppose that Gaboi Tzedakah was owed a money by somebody else. And that person came and paid him in the street. See, the Gabbai Tzedaka should not take that money and put it in his pocket. Same problem. People are going to be choshed that he took it for himself. He should put the money into the purse of Tzedaka. And when he comes home, then he can take it out. Turn on another din. Gabbai Tzedaka she'en l'maniyim l'chalik. If the Gabbai Tzedaka, we learned this in Brother Messiah as well, if the Gabbai Tzedaka have no aniyim currently to give out Tzedaka to, and the problem is mostly what they collect is copper coins start rusting and then deteriorating after a while. So you don't have aniyim. So therefore you want to exchange them for silver coins, which will last longer. They can exchange the money for other people, but not for themselves. Again, you don't want people to suspect them that they're taking more. Like you know how it is when a person is making change from a pushka or whatever. You don't want people to think that he's putting in that he's putting in a dollar and taking out $1.10 or whatever worth of change, or vice versa. Gaboy tamchoy. Similarly, when they're collecting for the tamchoy, she'en lam aniyim l'chalik. If they don't right now have any aniyim to give out the food to, and the food is going to spoil, merchin l'acherim. There you go. I was mentioning before that they sell the food to others. Yeah, the food is saleable. They sell it to others. Vein merchin l'atzman. Again, they should not sell it to themselves. They should not give their own money for it and take the food for themselves. Same problem. Chashav. Another din, mois shel tzedaka ein moinin ois in shtayim el shtayim shtayim ela achas achas. When you're counting out money of tzedakah, you should not count them two coins at a time, but rather one at a time. Rashi says again, it's a problem of chashad. People are going to think that maybe you counted one and really you're taking two. Other mafreshim say not so much because of chashad, but you might get mixed up. You might, if you're counting two by two, you might accidentally confuse two coins for three or whatever. Whereas if you're counting them singly, you're not going to make mistakes. I'm going to buy it. Originally, my Rebbe, which is Rabba, would not sit on the mats that were in Shul. The Rambam mentions in Hilchos Tefila that in Arab countries and in Bavel in olden days, they used to sit on mats in Shul, where he says in Ore Edom, in Christian countries, they sit on benches or chairs in Shul like we do. But in Eastern countries, they sat on mats. So originally, Rabba would not sit on these mats in Shul. Rashi says because they would buy them with tzedakah money. Given the Shama Lahar de Tanya, but once he heard this braisa that we said earlier on the Amud, that the Bnei Ha'ir are allowed to switch out the money of tzedakah and use it for other purposes as they see fit, Haba Yosef, then he would sit on these mats. Now, that works out according to Tosfos and most of the Rishonim who say that means even for non-tzedakah purposes. What about according to the Rimigash and the others who hold that no, they can only switch it out for tzedakah purposes, not others. So they have a different girsa over here. The Rif has a different girsa. That the problem was they had mats that were meant to use in the Beis Medrash and had been taken to the shul or vice versa. But l'shanoi to l'chol mashiyutzu, fine. They have the right to say that furnishings that we use in the Beis Medrash can be used in the shul or vice versa, as the case may be. But nothing to do with tzedakah per se.
In the case where the problem bar saying this is not.
This is a new topic. This is a new topic. We're getting back to analyzing the Braisa, which we quoted before, which gave a bunch of basic rules for Gabbai tzedakah. Or gave a basic, not for Gabbai tzedakah, but rather for the collection of tzedakah in general. Amar Abaye. Abaye says another thing that Rabba realized to change the way that he does with collecting tzedakah. Originally, my Rebbe, again, Rabba, made two purses, prepared himself two purses. One he used for collecting tzedakah for the aniyim of the city, and the other was for aniyim who came from outside the city. They need to be two different collections. Given the Shamal Ahad, the Amalev Shmuel, the Ratachlicha, but once he heard of this, that Shmuel had, in a previous generation, had told Rav Tachlicha Barav Dimi, who was also a Gabbai Tzedakah, where he told him, Ovid Chad Kisa, all you have to do is have one purse, but ask me Allah, and you make a Tanai with a Tzibur, that you can give them out as you see fit. It doesn't have to be reserved only for the Aniyah, Ha'ir, or the Aniyah Da'alma. So Rabba also did the same thing. He just made one purse, but asked me Allah, and he made a tnai on it from then on, rather than having to keep two separate accounts. Rav Ashi, Omar, Rav Ashi says, even you can have a case where you don't even need that. I, in my situation, don't even need to make a tonight. I can just do whatever I want with the tzedakah money at my discretion. Because anybody who comes to give money to the kufa does it, I'll das that it will be distributed according to my das. And that I'll be able to give it to whoever I see fit. Because Rav Ashi was the mora dasra in his city. Actually, some of Horshim say, the Forch is Rav Ashi, we know the famous thing that Rav Ashi was the first example since Rebbe of Torah Ugdullah B'Makom Echad. There was nobody in his generation who was his equal in Torah Ugdullah. So therefore he had broader discretionary powers than even Rabba, who, for example, in Rabba's time, there was Rav Yosef, who was his equal. Going back now to, we mentioned in the Braisa that the Bnei Ha'ir are allowed to make various takonas for the good of the city, and we said and they're allowed to fine anybody who violates their takonas. So there's a story in that connection. Tanu Beitre Tapri, there were these two butchers, the Avge in Yonah Bahadi Adobi. They made a deal with each other. The Koman the Ovid Biyom de Chavre, anybody who would shecht animals on the day that was reserved for the other one, Nikru'u l'mashche, they would take the skin of the animal that he had shechted and rip it up to fine him for that. In other words, they'd made that, we'll switch off. I'll shecht Sunday, you'll shecht Monday, etc. That way there won't be too much meat on the market, which isn't going to sell. So, Ozochad Minayah over B'yemer Dechavre, one of them violated the Tanai and went and shechted on the day that was supposed to be reserved for the other guy. So they ripped up the skin of his the animal that he had shechted in accordance with the Tanai. Also the Kamei de Rava, so they came to Rava for a din Torah. Chayvinu Rava l'Shalomi, and Rava obligated the butchers to pay for the ripped up skin. So Rav Yehuda Bashlemi asked Rava, what do you mean? We learned in the Braisa, we'll ask the Alkitzasim that Bnei Ha'ir have the ability to make a Tanai like that and to enforce it. Lo yahad delay Rava, and Rava did not answer him. Amar Rapapa shapir ovid delay yahad delay. So Rapapa says actually Rava had a good reason for not answering him. Delay yahad delay. Hani mili hecha deleka adam choshev, because all this that we're saying that the Bnei Ha'ir have the right to make these tznayim or lasiyah al kitzasin and to enforce them is hecha deleka adam choshev, only if there's not an adam choshev in the city, meaning a prominent talmid chacham to whom they should be consulting first before just going and making tznayim on their own. Aval hecha deika adam choshev, when you have an adam choshev in that town, lav kol kminayu demasnu, then it's not just up to them to make such a tonight. They need to check with him first. In this case, for example, you could argue that, fine, it's helping them that they're going to make sure they're going to be able to sell their meat at a good price. Maybe it's not so good for the people of the city. Maybe the people of the city would like to have more meat available so they can buy it more cheaply. Therefore, they should have consulted with an adam choshev first.
And who did they come before, Rava?
They came before Rava.
And Rava was in the city.
So Rava was in the city. Actually, the Chabad Yair explains that's why are we saying lo yahadulei Rava? That Rava didn't answer Rav Yehuda Bashlemi.
You should have come to me.
I'm out of kosher. Exactly. He wasn't.
Yeah,
but right, but that was the gist of it.
אני לא מזמן, פה בקהילה, לי פה חבר שהפך פה נסתר בארגנטינה. נסתר. שפה בקהילה פרסו מקביל, ואני לא רציתי להזכיר את השם של הבן הרב, כאילו לא לבייש אותו. עכשיו, עשו פה מקביל לכל אחד מהעניים פה בקהילה, ואני באתי פה לגבי, אמרתי שמה, יש בעיה כך וכך וכך, הוא לא, לא שהוא לא רצה לצאת, גם חשדתי. השאלה אם אני יכול להכריח אותו,
אני חושב שלא, אבל אני לא פוסק, אז אני לא יודע. אתה לא גבי צדקה רשמי.
כן, אבל זה מידה נכון שלי, זה לא שיקרת.
אני יודע שלא שיקרת, אבל לא דווקא שהוא צריך לסמוך על זה, לא יודע.
אוקיי.
בעצם אני לא יודע. אני לא רב. תשאל את השאלות שלך את הרב, את הרב מורה הרב. יש כאלה בקרונאיץ, ברוך השם.
לא, בסדר, אמרתי נזכרת נושא של פרקה, אז אמרתי אולי
זה נוגע מה... Different Mepharshim talk about, by the way, we started by saying that there were two butchers. So some Mepharshim say that's only because there were two of them. Maybe if it had been all butchers in the town, maybe they would have the right to do it even without the Adam Choshev checking on it. The Bach, though, takes out the word Beit Rei because there were other Mepharshim who learned that. No, even if it was all the butchers in town, they still have to check with the Adam Choshev. They still can't just do it on their own. Turn it up on them. in mechashvin b'tzedakim b'tzedakim gaboy tzedakah. When you have gaboy tzedakah who are collecting, you don't calculate with them. You don't ask them to give an accounting. New, you give me an accounting exactly how much you collected and where you spent it on. V'loy b'hektish im gizborin, and similarly, hektish doesn't do like that with the gizborin. The achafishen raya l'dover, even though you don't have a real raya for that. You still have a hint to Shanema because you have a pasuk in that Torah. Parsha Scrollim, they would not figure out, they would not ask for an accounting from the people to whom they gave the money, which they would go and give it out to the contractors who were doing the work in the Bismakesh. Because they're doing it honestly. The vote is, obviously, we're talking about if the Gabori Tzedakah and the Gizvarim are honest. I mean, if they're not, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Matnas Anim that if you know the local Gabori Tzedakah are not so honest, then don't give to them. Better to give to the Kupa Shul Tzedakah that's run by honest people, or give out Tzedakah yourself or whatever. Yeah. Moshe Rabbeinu still gave an accounting. Right, we're not saying they don't have to. We're not saying you can't obligate them to, but still, it would be right for the Gabori Tzedakah on his own to go and give an accounting like Moshe did in Parshas Korach. Yeah. Amar Rabbi Elazar, speaking of these psukim, Rabbi Elazar says, even if a person has a trustworthy treasurer in his house who takes care of his money, yotzur v'yimne, it would still be good for him to it's still good advice for the balabas to still tie up and to still bundle up the money and count it before he gives it to the guy. Even if he's not going to ask him, even if Rashi says, even if he's not going to ask him for an accounting, it would still be good ahead of time to bundle it up and count it before you give it to him. Shenema v'yetzuru v'yimnu, as you find in those sukkim, also in the Aftarot of Shkolim, that they tied up the money in bundles and they counted them, and then they gave it to the gizborim to give to the contractors for the work. And Marsha says also the vote is that you want to tie it up, because the Gemara elsewhere says that the Gemara elsewhere says that something that's tied up the shading, I have no mazikim, I have no power over it. So therefore, you do it that way also, and then yeah, not only you're safe from the gizbar, but also you're safe from any mazikin. Omer Avuna, boitkin l'mezoinus vein boitkin l'ksus. When it comes to if an oni comes and says, I need food, we have to check him out first, make sure that he's not trying to trick them, that he's not stam claiming to be hungry when he's really not. Vein boitkin l'ksus, but if somebody comes without clothes, or with ripped clothes or whatever, and says, I need clothes, you give him right away, you don't check. Rav Huna says, I can bring you a posik to prove that, and I can bring you a svara. Iboisem a svara, because hai kamavazi, v'hai lo kamavazi, because the one who doesn't have ksus is in bizoyan, he's standing over there without proper clothes, whereas the one who's hungry, okay, he's not in such a case of bizoyan. Well, obviously, we're not talking about when the guy, well, yeah, we're not talking about like the story of Nochemish Gamzu where the guy's on his last legs, you know, we're not talking about when he's quite that desperate. Iboisem a kra, or I can bring you a pasuk. The pasuk says, it's an aftarah of Yom Kippur morning. Shouldn't you be spreading out your and giving out your bread to the hungry? But it says with a sin. Now the word parois is spelled with a sin, which therefore we can darshan it as if it was with a shin. Parosh, first check out the situation, v'hadar havlay, and then give it. Mind you, our Tanakh don't have it with a sin. They actually have it with a samach. Oh. Some of the Farshim say, yeah, this is one of the examples where we find that the Gemara evidently had a slightly different Masorah than we do. There's a dozen or so places in Shas where the Gemara mentions, where it makes a reference to some detail in a pasuk, where our Sifrei Torah or our Tanakh have it slightly differently. Others explain that maybe not, but even if it's written with a sin, even if it's written with a samach, we can still darshan because of the fact that it uses the word parois rather than some other, like pain or whatever. Yeah. But on the other hand, the psukim say over there, if you see a person who is naked, cover him, implying kitira la alter. If you see him, cover him right away. Don't ask. Don't start checking into the situation first. Okay, that's Rav Huna. Rav Yehuda says the other way around. On the contrary, if somebody comes and claims that he needs clothes, you have to check it out first, make sure that he's not just putting on an act, but not for food. Again, Rav Yehuda says, he borrows him a svara, he borrows him a kra. Again, I also have a svara and a pasuk to prove my point. He borrows him a svara, because hai kamatsarale, b'hai lo kamatsarale, because the person who is hungry is having tsar from the fact that he's hungry. The person who doesn't have clothes, he's not having such a tsar from it. He borrows him a kra, or I can prove it from the same pasuk, that I can prove it from the same psukim that Rav Huna used for his position, because Because when it comes to food, the pasuk says you should be spreading out your food, your bread for the hungry, implying pareis la'altir. Immediately you should be giving it out to him because he doesn't darshan the shin, same thing. B'chidikarinan. So we explain the word pareis as it's written, that it means you give it out. But the pasuk says when you see a person who is naked, then cover him, implying meaning when you see him, meaning when you check out and you see that he is not, that he's not a Ramai. Tani Chava says Rav Yehuda, and in fact we learn a braisa like Rav Yehuda. If somebody says cover me, give me clothes, you have to check out first to make sure he's not a Ramai. But if he says give me food, ain't Birkin, then we don't have to check, we give him right away. So the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. Interesting point that some of the Achronim bring up. From the Gemara over here, it comes out that a person's dignity as having clothes is less important than Sar Aguf. We have a case in Sanhedrin, though, it was also in Sota, about when a person is given skila, where we see the other way around. The halacha is that a woman doesn't have her clothes removed, even though it's going to cause more Sar Aguf, because she's going to beat her cushion her fall a little bit, in order to prevent her bezoyin. So how does it fit? The Ur Sameach gives an answer. He says, because look at it this way. Even if the guy is putting on an act, but if he comes to us and says he's hungry, first, the fact of the matter is he is hungry. He is actually suffering hunger pangs right now. It might be his own fault. It might be that he's not eating properly as he should or whatever, but the fact of the matter is he is suffering it right now. On the other hand, if he comes without proper clothing, okay, if he's putting on an act, that means he's not feeling the bizoyan at all. I mean, it's not a bizoyan that he is bechlal feeling. Yeah, people who don't mind going around in less clothing than they should. And obviously, if this guy is taka putting on an act, then that means he's that kind of person. Therefore, yes, we can say in that sense his bizoyan is less important. Simon McKay.